The Life of Jesus by Brother Malva Purkis. Book 4, Chapter 19. Among the Gergesenes. Gergesa was a town of some importance on the eastern shore of the Sea of Galilee, one of the 10 cities of the Decapolis, a region of Greek culture. It was ruled over by Herod Philip. Today its ruins and tombs can still be seen by the side of the solitary cliffs that rise precipitously out of the water. And it was here that Jesus stepped ashore in the early dawn that followed the momentous night. The disciples would still feel shaken and full of wonder. Could they ever forget the transformation they'd seen? One moment they'd looked upon the intensely human picture of their Lord asleep. The next they'd gazed at a figure they did not recognize, who commanded the elements with majestic authority. Now they were about to witness a fresh unveiling of his power. Among the tombs of Gergesa lurked a raging madman, more terrifying in aspect than they'd ever encountered. Matthew speaks of two demoniacs, Mark and Luke only of one. It would appear that the man who described himself as Legion was by far the most formidable, and therefore the one upon whom Jesus concentrated his attention, whilst of course healing both. For the purpose of narrative, we follow Mark and Luke and speak only of one. But the composite picture presented by the evangelists is a fearful one. We see an unclothed maniac roaming the mountains and the tombs, a grotesque monster who could not be bound even with chains, bleeding from the gashes of self-imposed wounds, exceedingly fierce. He prevented anyone from venturing near him. Seeing the boat pulled up to the shore and its occupants making their way toward the tombs, the demented man dashed down upon them. But suddenly, while he was still some distance away, he stopped. Something in his disordered mind felt a power greater than his madness. He ran forward only to fall at Christ's feet. Jesus immediately began the heavy task of mastering his will and overcoming his hallucinations. He commanded the evil spirit to come out of the man, but it brought a frenzied outburst. "What have I to do with thee, Jesus, thou Son of God Most High?" How was it possible that this poor madman could have any knowledge of the Christ? We cannot tell, but we do know that Jesus always demanded a responsive faith in those he cured. Unbelief had prevented his beneficent work in Nazareth. It is not possible that Jesus impressed his identity. Is it not possible that Jesus impressed his identity upon the tortured mind and thus gave the man the opportunity of making that contribution of faith necessary to his own healing? The knowledge that he was the Son of God was only the first stage in the cure. It evoked a greater tumult in him. "I beseech thee, torment me not." Steadily Jesus persevered, still preparing him for the moment of response. He asked, "What is thy name?" The simple question broke through his defences. He had believed of all those of his day that if a man became demented, it was because of evil demons who had taken possession of him. "My name is Legion," he cried pathetically, "for we are many." And he pleaded that Jesus would not send them away into the country. Then, looking across at the cliff top, the man saw a great herd of swine feeding. "Send us into the swine, that we may enter into them." Here was the opportunity which would give the man ground for faith. If he had visible evidence that the demons had departed from him, he would believe. Watching with painful intensity, he saw a sudden movement among the animals. It spread rapidly. Several rushed headlong down the slope, and they were followed by the others in a mad stampede. Unable to check the gathering impetus, they plunged into the sea. The man looked at Jesus for the first time with faith in his eyes, and Jesus healed him. There was a sad sequel to this moving incident. The keepers of the swine hurried to the city to tell their story, and the whole population came out towards the tombs they'd deserted for so long. There the people found the man who so recently had been a raging maniac, sitting quietly at the feet of Jesus, clothed and in his right mind. And Mark says they were afraid. That reaction was altogether natural. Fear can be a low form of faith. But the tragedy came when they learned what had become of their swine. They began to plead with Jesus to depart from their coasts. They did not seek his identity and brought him no sick. They offered him no hospitality. They besought him to leave them. And Luke says quite simply, he went up into the ship and returned back again. But for a brief moment the sun broke through, and the collective prayer of the inhabitants was followed by a single prayer. The man who had called himself Legion prayed for discipleship. He besought Jesus that he would allow him to come back with him. Granting the prayer of the multitude, Jesus left them to their fate. But refusing the desire of the man he'd healed to stay with him, he conferred upon him the obligations of discipleship. And Luke tells us, he went his way and published throughout the whole city how great things Jesus had done for him. Some controversy has surrounded this miracle that stands so uniquely in the midst of the Galilean ministry. This can, however, be dismissed. We can turn to the simple record and learn with gratitude that the miracle itself is its own justification. He who commands the wind and the sea has the same wonderful power over the minds and hearts of men. No obstacle of mind or spirit is too great for him to transform when faith is born. The great question is not why did the Lord permit the destruction of 2,000 swine. That question supplies its own answer. The life of the man was of more value than many swine. More than ever so, because that man was destined to be not only a disciple, but in a measure an apostle also. Was he not a forerunner of the great apostle to the Gentiles, telling the men of Decapolis the great tidings of what Jesus had done, evoking their wonder? No, the important question is this: why did the Gergesenes beseech Jesus to depart? It's important because these lakeside inhabitants have a large posterity descending to our day and capable of infiltrating even into the houses of those who profess allegiance to him. The keeping of swine is no sinful occupation. The cares and responsibilities of this busy life, the sustenance of our families, and the modest target our ambition sets are all legitimate. But when Christ makes a demand in endangering them, there lies the challenge. It is then that each has to answer for himself. Do I want to see the little boat sailing back across the lake? Do I want to be left alone with my swine?